Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. Marines and aircraft have moved closer to North Africa, and Nigeria's president cancels a trip home of the kidnapped girls. I'm Frances Alonzo reporting from Washington. The United States has strengthened its forces in Sicily following possible terrorist threats against U.S. targets in North Africa. Nearly 200 Marines, four Osprey aircraft, and two KC-130 planes were transferred to the Italian island this week from their base in Spain. Speaking today in Washington, a State Department spokesman would not specify the nature of the threats, but said the forces were moved to support the security of diplomatic personnel. There has been fighting this week in Benghazi, Libya, where Islamist militants attacked the U.S. consulate in September 2012 and killed Ambassador Christopher Stevens. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has canceled a visit to a northeastern town where Islamist militants last month seized more than 200 schoolgirls. Officials said today that Mr. Jonathan is not able to make the trip to Chibok village in Borno province because of security considerations. President Jonathan now plans to head to a regional security meeting to be convened Saturday by French President Francois Hollande. Twin bombings have rocked a busy market area of Nairobi, leaving at least 10 people dead and 70 wounded. The blast took place today, just days after the U.S. and Britain issued travel warnings for Kenya. Police say two improvised explosive devices were detonated in the market near downtown. They say one of those bombs hit a public minibus. There were no immediate claims of responsibility. Iran is topping the agenda of the United States' top defense official visits Israel. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel discussed Iran's nuclear program with Israeli leaders and addressed Israel's biggest fear, a nuclear-armed Iran.
I want to assure you of the United States' continued commitment to ensuring Iran does not get a nuclear weapon.
Iran says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, but Israel sees it as a threat to the existence of the Jewish state. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
A Turkish mining company has defended its safety record amid growing criticism after an explosion and fire at a coal mine in Soma that killed more than 280 people. The owner of the Soma Holding Company said today that his company has been spending money to avoid accidents, but he did admit that the mine's only safety chamber had been removed. Earlier today, Turkey's energy minister, Taner Yildiz, said a maximum of 18 people are still trapped inside the mine, revising downward a figure that was once believed to be more than 100. It's not clear if the men are still trapped or alive. This is the energy minister. He says officials expect the final death toll from the accident to be around 300. India's opposition leader Narendra Modi is pledging to work for the good of all Indians after a landslide election victory for his Hindu nationalist party, BJP. Partial results show Mr. Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party sweeping the ruling Congress Party from power by a massive margin. Meanwhile, the Congress Party president, Sonia Gandhi, conceded defeat today. Both she and her son, party vice president Rahul Gandhi, who led the campaigning, personally took responsibility for the loss. A senior UN official warns that Lebanon is buckling under the strain of caring for more than 1 million Syrian refugees and is considering imposing control measures on Syrians trying to enter the country. Lebanon is hosting 1.1 million Syrian refugees. That's equivalent to one quarter of its population. United Nations monitors say violence by anti-government groups in eastern Ukraine is causing an alarming deterioration of human rights amid a political crisis between Kiev and pro-Russian separatists. UN Human Rights Chief Navi Pillay said today that the UN findings also raise deep concern for minorities facing harassment in Crimea. That's the South Ukraine region that was annexed by Russia in March. More details on this and more at voanews.com. I'm Frances Alonzo, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Kenyan officials say at least 10 people died and 70 others were wounded Friday in two explosions targeting a minibus and a busy market in the capital, Nairobi.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting on the latest terrorist attack in Kenya. We'll have full details coming up. Also in the news, Nigeria's president cancels plans to stop at the site of the kidnapping of an estimated 300 schoolgirls while on the way to a Paris meeting. And the UNHCR says more people have been displaced in the CAR following this week's fighting in the central north. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our feature reports. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Kenyan officials say at least 10 people died and 70 others were wounded today in two explosions targeting a minibus and a busy market in the capital, Nairobi. The attacks come days after the U.S. and British governments issued travel advisories regarding potential terrorist attacks in the country. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan city of Mombasa.
The explosions Friday targeted a public transport vehicle and a busy market. Investigators say IEDs, improvised explosive devices, were used to carry out the two attacks. Nairobi Police Chief Benson Kibua says police, acting on tips from the public, have detained a suspect in the bombing.
One thing I would like to commend members of public, particularly around this place, they were able to identify one suspect. They arrested one suspect, possibly identified. He is with us. We will question him.
The security officials say the suspect is a Kenyan national. Even before the attack, 300 British tourists were evacuated from the coastal city of Mombasa following the travel advisories issued by the British Foreign Office. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said such evacuations only help the terrorists.
Acts like were done yesterday by the people that you've just mentioned only strengthens the will of terrorists as opposed to helping us defeat that war. But all said and done, we as a country must move on. We must do what we can. We shall endeavor to do what we can. We will continue to market our country to other destinations.
The Mombasa County Executive in charge of tourism, Joab Tumbo, lamented the impact the advisories and the bombings may have.
As we speak right now, evacuations have taken place. We also made to understand that the evacuations will continue. And you must agree with me that as a result of that, we are also, as a county, staring at a possibility of hotels closing down.
In a new statement on Friday, the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi warned its citizens to increase their personal security in the light of continuing terror threats and violent crime in Kenya. The statement in part reads, terrorist acts can include suicide operations, bombings to include car bombings, kidnappings, attacks on civil aviation, and attacks on maritime vessels in and near Kenyan ports. The Kenyan government has tried to assure its citizens and visitors the country is safe and its security forces are vigilant. But after Friday's attack, it may take a long time before anyone believes the country is safe from future attacks. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Mombasa.
In northern Nigeria, some religious leaders are calling on the government to negotiate with Boko Haram militants for the release of hundreds of girls kidnapped last month. They say military efforts to rescue them have failed, and an international coalition is not likely to succeed where local authorities cannot. Heather Murdoch has more from Abuja.
Nigerians have been debating the wisdom of peace talks with Boko Haram militants for years. Officials frequently say they are willing to negotiate. They also frequently say they can't negotiate with terrorists or hold a dialogue with ghosts, a reference to the secretive nature of Boko Haram's leaders. This week, Boko Haram said it would release some of the nearly 300 schoolgirls they kidnapped in exchange for imprisoned members. Officials originally said they would consider all options. But on Wednesday, Britain's Minister for Africa, Mark Simmons, said Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan made it very clear there will be no negotiation with Boko Haram. Abdullahi Bayero is the spokesperson for the Supreme Council of Sharia in Nigeria. He says the military has failed to rescue the girls, but dialogue might save them.
Formally, the government are saying you cannot deal with a ghost. You don't know whom you are dealing with. They are doing guerrilla wars. They are doing this, they are doing that. Now, in the infinite mercy of God, these people, these insurgents, we know where they are.
Even if the girls are rescued, he says, without negotiations, the circumstances in which Boko Haram emerged will remain and the group will continue to thrive. Boko Haram began as a fundamentalist sect in the early 2000s, becoming violent in 2009. Bayero says its anti-government and anti-Western ideology took root in part because most people in northeastern Nigeria live in abject poverty. Boko Haram has now grown into an extremist insurgency, killing thousands of people, including hundreds of schoolchildren. The fact that the government cannot protect the public causes feelings of distrust, says Bayero.
Now the government have to understand to know what is their responsibilities on their citizen. What is the right of the people that they are governing? What were their right to live as a country? In as long as you can allow people to be killing, there is insecurity, of course, it have to cause all this issue. That issue of poverty.
Other northern religious leaders say the Boko Haram insurgency has been described to the public in a partial and confusing way, and no more so than about the kidnapped girls. Pastor Johanna Buru heads the Peace, Revival, and Reconciliation Foundation of Nigeria in the northern city of Kaduna. He says the public still doesn't know exactly how many girls are missing or what is being done to rescue them. He backs the idea of a swap to release the girls.
Now he said that they should release their colleagues for an exchange with these ladies. One, why won't government do that? They should do it. If they're doing that in a good faith, and if they really want dialogue.
This week, several countries and the United Nations pledged to help Nigeria rescue the girls and fight Boko Haram. On Tuesday, Minister of Foreign Affairs Aminu Wale expressed his appreciation for the foreign assistance, but warned that amid high hopes for the girls' safe return, Nigerians need to manage our expectations. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
Thank you, Heather. Nigerian President Jonathan has canceled plans to stop at the site of the kidnapping while on the way to a Paris meeting. Mr. Jonathan is going to Paris to discuss mounting security concerns in his country's north. Senior government officials confirmed reports that he decided not to make a highly publicized stop in the small northern town of Chibok. The officials cited security concerns. Mr. Jonathan is to meet counterparts from neighboring countries to discuss a widening regional crisis in combating Boko Haram. The meeting was proposed by French President Francois Hollande. In related news, the U.S. Defense Department's African Affairs Director has told a Senate committee that Nigeria's military appears afraid to engage Boko Haram fighters. Nigerian troops have complained to local reporters they are poorly equipped, poorly paid, and poorly fed. After a Monday shootout outside of Chibok with insurgents in which as many as 12 soldiers were killed, other soldiers reportedly threatened mutiny with gunfire. Last year, Mr. Jonathan, a Christian from the south of Nigeria, said he suspected that the Islamist Boko Haram has infiltrated the military, his government, and even his cabinet. Thousands have died in Boko Haram's attempts to establish an independent Islamic state in the northeast of Nigeria. Fourteen minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The UNHCR says more people have been displaced in the Central African Republic following this week's fighting in the central north. More than 23,000 people have left their homes, almost double the number from a month earlier. Most are Christian women and children. Many of the men are in hiding in the bush due to fear of attacks by armed groups. I spoke with UNHCR spokesperson Adrian Edwards about the situation in the central north and northwest regions of the country.
There is a clear worsening of the situation both in the central north area and in the northwest now. We have seen about 23,000 people being displaced in an area called Kago Bandoro, which is in the mid-center of the country, just over the last few weeks. People are fleeing to settlement sites. They're around churches in nearby villages. Some are still hiding out in the bush. So it's a pretty precarious situation indeed. And that's made worse right now by the fact it's very hard to get access to these people. In the northwest, we're looking at a prefecture right in the far northwest corner of the country in Uhanpende, where we've had about 2,500 people displaced following an attack just a few days ago. So overall, still a serious and worsening humanitarian situation in several critical regions of Central African Republic.
I understand that most of those that are fleeing are women and children, while the men are hiding out. Is that correct?
Many of the men are simply in fear of being targeted by attacks by armed groups. It's an extremely violent environment in which people are. And, of course, they need their family to get help, humanitarian help, whatever help they can. But you can understand in this situation that some people feel it's simply not safe to be seen. And this is causing real difficulties because, in addition to all the other problems, it's extremely hard to get help to people in that kind of circumstance. So that's a humanitarian challenge for all of us working there.
What are the most urgent needs at this time?
Well, there are many needs. Right now, food is a big problem in some areas. Some food is getting through, but people, because they have been forced to flee their homes, they're not planting crops, they're exhausting their own remaining food stocks, and they're in areas, as I've said, where because of the insecurity, it's hard to get help to people. So food is a very big need, but they need other things too, water, sanitation. There are longer-term needs now that are becoming quite acute. These are to do with healthcare on the one hand and education too for the many children who simply aren't able to go on with their studies. So there are many needs indeed. If I can come to another point, if you look at Central African Republic now with this continuing disastrous conflict here, you have 560,000 people displaced internally. You have about 115,000 people in neighboring countries as refugees. These are enormous numbers for a country and a region with such sparse capacity to help. And if I can put that in context, if you look at another one of the world's major humanitarian crises at the moment, which is Syria, you'll see in Jordan, for example, the numbers are in the region of 600,000 displaced. So, in other words, Jordan, with all it's doing for the many refugees there, is dealing with a smaller caseload than we now have in Central African Republic.
Thank you for putting that in perspective for us. And also, are people going into Chad, and how is Chad being able to accommodate these people?
Chad has its own difficulties, of course, in being able to accommodate people. And you have to look at this region where you have both Central African Republic, the crisis now in South Sudan, and also displacement further to the west coming out of the far northeast of Nigeria. So there are numerous difficulties, I think, in the region. Chad has so far received something in the region of 14,000 refugees from the Central African Republic. We hope they will continue to keep their borders open because right now it's essential that those who are in desperate need of safety have some access to safe haven. So crucial that that support and that safe haven continue to remain there.
That was Adrian Edwards, spokesperson for the UNHCR. He spoke with me from Geneva. In other news on Central African Republic, a major operation is underway to help farmers. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization and 16 other NGOs are distributing seeds and tools in hopes of saving the next planting season. About 1,800 tons of seed for staple crops, along with hand tools, are to be distributed by the end of the month to nearly 76,000 families. The goal is for each family to raise enough maize, rice, and groundnuts to feed themselves for 4 months. Ongoing violence in the CAR displaced many farmers and disrupted the planting season, creating a food insecurity risk. Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Health workers are frequently becoming targets in countries undergoing conflict or civil unrest. A new report says since 2012, hundreds have been attacked in dozens of countries. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Human Rights Watch and the Safeguarding Health in Conflict Coalition jointly issued the report called Under Attack. Joe Amon is HRW's Health and Human Rights Director.
Well, there's been an increasing number of attacks against health workers, against patients, and against health facilities. And this is occurring really globally. We've seen it in Afghanistan and Pakistan, South Sudan, Central African Republic. And it's really something that needs broader attention and really a vigorous response.
The attacks include the killing of 70 polio vaccination workers in Pakistan and Nigeria. The report also accuses opposition forces in South Sudan of shooting patients, as well as looting and burning hospitals and clinics in Bentu, Malakal, and Bor.
It's clear that in some cases people are deliberately targeting health workers. They're seen as providing care to the opposition instead of being seen as neutral medical providers. In other cases, they may be in the crossfires, but it's interrupting and really destabilizing critical health services for civilians in these settings.
The report lists dozens of attacks, killings, and abductions of health workers in Afghanistan. It says the country now has a shortage of qualified women providing medical care. Amen gives other examples of growing danger.
We're also seeing attacks in Turkey and Bahrain, for example, doctors being arrested and detained for providing care. It's a phenomenon that's of real concern, and I think the severity of the attacks is also increasing.
The attacks have caused some hospitals and clinics to shut down.
In some cases, yes. In Somalia and Central African Republic, that's definitely occurred. And when that happens, it can leave thousands of people without any access to health care at all.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders closed its hospital in the northern CAR town of Bogila. That followed an attack on April 26th. 16 civilians were killed, including three of the group's employees. The Human Rights Watch official says a number of things can be done to protect health workers.
One is we need more information when attacks occur. We need to get better security for health workers in these places. Countries that have criminalized the provision of care to protesters need to repeal those laws. And there needs to be general respect for the idea that medical providers are providing care without regard to politics and that they should be left out of conflict settings and not targeted at all.
Amen says the international community can also do more.
Next week, ministers from health around the world are meeting in Geneva, and one of the things they'll be looking at is a resolution from 2 years ago that they passed to do more on this issue, to do more surveillance of the issue, and to do more response for it. I think clearly the Human Rights Council, the ministers of health from these countries, the WHO, other agencies can say that this is a real priority. These kinds of attacks undermine the basic security and access to health care that people need.
The health ministers will meet from May 19th through the 24th. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 23 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Twin bombings have rocked a busy market area of Nairobi, leaving at least 10 people dead and 70 wounded. Some religious leaders in northern Nigeria call on the government to negotiate with Boko Haram militants for the release of the girls kidnapped last month. And the UNHCR says more people have been displaced in the CAR following this week's fighting in the central north. And of course, we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237. As Malawi media watchdogs have been monitoring local journalists in the run-up to the elections, one of the watchdogs is the Institute for War and Peace Reporting, or IWPR. It is conducting a monitoring project that so far has released two reports showing a distinct bias by reporters. But media organizations are disputing the findings. VOA's Lamech Messina reports from Blantyre.
The media monitoring is funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development and the British Department for International Development. Media outlets under scrutiny in Malawi include the country's only two daily newspapers, state-owned and privately-owned radio and TV stations, online publications, and postings on the social media like Twitter and Facebook. Cheo Mita is the project manager at IWPR in Malawi.
The whole essence is to help the media, like to tell them that there are certain things we need to do to ensure that the coverage is fair. We're looking at all political candidates that are in the race because, you know, it's a tripartite election.
In its latest report, the organization says the media has been biased, giving more coverage to ruling People's Party presidential candidate Joyce Banda than the other 11 presidential candidates. Edrini Kayambazi is a lecturer at the University of Malawi who presented the findings.
For example, NBC Radio, NBC TV is pro PP and they cover PP more with a positive tone. Whilst TV Times will also cover PP but from a negative tone. And then you look at Joy Radio, we found that Joy is pro UDF but anti PP, and that is a fact.
Brian Ligomega is the managing editor at the Times Group, which owns a number of newspapers, and Times TV. He tells VOA the findings are misleading.
Their findings are completely wrong and questionable. We as a Times Group, we have been objective, and what we report are facts. And I'm surprised that they say that we report negative about the ruling People's Party. What is their definition of negative news? What is their definition of positive news? When we report that Kumbo Kachari has resigned from PP, is that negative news? First of all, they should give us a clear definition of negative news before making such misleading reports.
Ligomega also has trashed the report's findings, showing that the media outlets have been giving more coverage to the presidential race than to the races of parliamentarians and councillors.
If the councillors and the parliamentary candidates are silent and are not campaigning and are not doing things that they are newsworthy, do you want us to create news for them? We are covering most presidential candidates because they are the ones who are busy campaigning. They are the ones who are busy organizing media briefings. So we will not create news for the councillors just for the sake of it. We are not in the business of creativity. We are in the business of reporting facts.
Mita says the organization is expected to release another report soon after the elections. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. In Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell for Music Time in Africa every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Yeah.
feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Some religious leaders in northern Nigeria call on the government to negotiate with Boko Haram militants for the release of the girls kidnapped last month, while Nigeria's president cancels plans to stop at the site of the kidnapping while on the way to a Paris meeting. And the UNHCR says more people have been displaced in the CAR following fighting this week. Coming up, we'll have music from Sierra Leone, and later, our series from South Africa looking at alternative beliefs. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Friday, Sunny.
Happy Friday, Kim, and sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners.
And I see you are kicking off with World Cup football news today.
Kim, with 27 days until the kickoff of football's premier event in Brazil, host cities Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro have been hit by violent anti-World Cup protests. Riot police fired tear gas and stun grenades Thursday to disperse thousands of demonstrators angry about the high cost of hosting the World Cup. Some of the protesters hurled stones, burned tires, and blocked roads. In Rio, where the World Cup final will be played July 13th, aerial images showed hundreds of people marching in rush hour traffic. The protesters say they're angry that billions of dollars are being spent on next month's football tournament rather than on health services, education, and housing. A report by Reuters says the percentage of Brazilians who identify themselves as in favor of the World Cup has dropped from 79% in 2008 to 48% last month. The USA's 30-man provisional World Cup team is training this week at Stanford University in Northern California. The USA's German coach, Jürgen Klinsmann, was asked about Brazil's stadium and infrastructure delays ahead of the World Cup. Klinsmann says he does not anticipate major problems for the 32 teams. However, he adds, and I quote, "It's not going to be a perfect World Cup. It's going to be an extreme type of a World Cup. You have got to be prepared that you are not going to get everything on a nice table. There will definitely be issues with certain things." Klinsmann adds, "This will be a World Cup of patience." The United States will play Ghana in its opening match June 16th at the World Cup Stadium in Natal, Brazil. The Arena das Dunas in Natal has a seating capacity of about 42,000. The first African team to see action at the stadium will not be Ghana, though. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon will play Mexico June 13th in Natal. Cameroon will be making its African record 7th World Cup appearance. Cameroon's German coach, Volker Finke, named a 28-man provisional World Cup squad earlier this week. As expected, Finke included Chelsea man Samuel Eto'o, Cameroon's four-time African Footballer of the Year. Up front with Eto'o in Cameroon's attack is Vincent Aboubakar, who scored 16 goals this season for Lorient, making him the joint second-highest scorer in French Ligue 1. Cameroon is scheduled to play 4 World Cup warm-up matches before traveling to Brazil, against Macedonia on May 26th, against Paraguay on May 29th, against Germany June 1st, and against Guatemala June 7th.
Hi.
I'm Shegu Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game.
In National Basketball Association playoff action Thursday night, the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder advanced to their conference finals with victories. Here in Washington, the Pacers ended the surprising and magical playoff run of my beloved Washington Wizards. The Pacers beat the Wizards 93-80 to win the best of seven game series 4-2. Forward David West led the Pacers with 29 points. He says before the series began, Indiana knew Washington would be a challenging opponent.
We looked at them, you know, this team should have probably been the third seed in the East. They lost Nene for an extended period of time. So we had, the ultimate respect for them because they were one of the deepest, more talented teams in the East. So we knew we had our hands full. We fully expected this to be a tough grind out series, and because they've got a good mix, young talent, athletes, bigs that are legitimate, and again we knew we'd be in for a dogfight. But again, I thought we just stayed the course. We were able to make adjustments, keep them on their heels, and again come out with a tough series win.
Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, the Oklahoma City Thunder came out with a tough series win against the Los Angeles Clippers. The Thunder topped the Clippers 104-98 to win the best of seven game series 4-2. Oklahoma City's league most valuable player and four-time scoring champion Kevin Durant turned in a sensational performance in game six. Durant scored a game-high 39 points, and he also grabbed a game-high 16 rebounds. So let's take a look at the matchups now in the NBA's Eastern and Western Conference Finals. In the Western Conference, Kevin Durant and the Thunder will face the San Antonio Spurs. Game one in that best of seven series will be Monday night in San Antonio, Texas. And in the Eastern Conference, David West and the Indiana Pacers will host the two-time defending champion Miami Heat. Game one in that series will be Sunday in Indianapolis, Indiana. The winners of the two series will advance to the NBA Finals. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Turning to African athletics, Mark Ouma caught up with a top Namibian sprinter who plans to compete at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, Scotland in July. Mark has that story for us, as well as other athletic news.
Namibian sprinter Jesse Urikob is hungry for more international success following his 100-meter and 200-meter triumph at the recent South Africa Open Athletics Championships in Tlokwe. He reckons this is the start of many good things to come.
Yes, I'm very happy. It's been a good week for me. It is a person in the back in 100, so yeah, I'm very happy.
What is your plan going forward?
My plan is to reach the semi-finals in the Commonwealth Games, both 100 and 200 meters.
Okay, and then the Africa Championship?
I hope to win a medal at the Africa Championship.
That was Namibia's Jesse Urikob, the South Africa Open 100-meter and 200-meter champion, speaking in Tlokwe, Northwest Province, South Africa. Meanwhile, the IWF World Challenge Series is set for Ponce in Puerto Rico tomorrow, Saturday. The IWF Diamond League is expected to take center stage in Shanghai, China, on Sunday. Elsewhere, Ethiopian multiple world record holder Kenenisa Bekele and Kenyan world marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang face off at the Great Manchester 10-kilometer run in Britain, while the MTN Kigali Peace Marathon will be contested in the Rwanda capital on Sunday. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend.
Hey, g'day mates, remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Follow the sunny side of sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments at my Facebook page. One of the recent photos I posted was that of South African hurdler Wenda Nell, who talked with Mark Ouma during Thursday's Sunny Side of Sports. Wenda is shown clearing a hurdle during a race in South Africa. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. One of my sporty friends in Nigeria, Toyin Ibitoye of Channels Television, tweeted the following: how can we ever say thank you enough to Sonny Young for his very lively NBA playoffs update on Sports Tonight? Well, when I chatted with Toyin Thursday evening on Sports Tonight, I told him I had my fingers crossed that the Washington Wizards could force a Game 7 against the Indiana Pacers. Alas, the Wizards weren't able to advance, but their magical playoff run was definitely one of the feel-good stories here in Washington in recent weeks. In other NBA news, I imagine Los Angeles Clippers coach Doc Rivers is not feeling so good on this Friday. As I mentioned, the Clippers were eliminated from the playoffs Thursday night by the Oklahoma City Thunder. In addition to that, Doc has been fined $25,000 by the NBA for criticizing game officials during Game 5 against the Thunder. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Have a good weekend, everyone. Back to Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And today, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America. Well, coming up, the final part of our series on alternative religions, and thousands of Nigerian youth are scouring northern Nigeria for information on the location of the kidnapped schoolgirls. First, here's Daddy Mus of Sierra Leone with I Wanna Love You.
up to me, yeah. Just look up to me, girl. Hold it back to me, girl. Never, never, never hold it.
Daddy Mus with I Wanna Love You. While a South African woman claims to be able to contact and communicate with the spirits of deceased people, Abigail McCarthy is a medium at the House of Isis Spiritual Healing Center in Johannesburg. She maintains that she's not a charlatan and that she provides an essential service to people who are in great pain. Darren Taylor reports in the final part of our series on alternative beliefs.
The medium's consultation room in a townhouse in the Johannesburg suburb of Parkview contains not much more than a table and two chairs. McCarthy sits in one of them, scribbling on a notepad. She's in her early 40s, with long dark hair and intense blue-green eyes. She says she started seeing dead people when she was about 6 years old.
As a small child, I remember in the house we were staying in quite an old house, and waking up and there was a woman at the top of the passage, thinking it was my mother calling for her. And when she turned round, I saw it wasn't my mother.
McCarthy says it later emerged that the woman had died in the house many years before. In her 20s, she began reading tarot cards, and to her amazement, she found that it allowed her to make contact with the spirits of her clients' deceased loved ones.
And in readings, while I was doing the reading, I would just get a picture of someone and say, who is this person? Why do I see them? This is what they look like. This is what they're saying. And I would find people would suddenly be in tears, or they'd be sitting there saying, oh, wow, that's...
McCarthy says she was initially very afraid of communicating with the spirits. She was also embarrassed of being a medium and found it hard to tell people about her extraordinary ability.
Either they'd run up to me and start asking me all sorts of questions, or they'd roll their eyes and not come near me.
But she says the more contact she had with the dead, the more she realized she was helping their bereaved loved ones to cope with their deaths. McCarthy sees people who've lost family and friends in terrible circumstances, such as suicides and auto accidents.
I've had a father who lost his children. People have lost their parents recently, but the children, yeah, when that happens, the pain is unbearable, or somebody losing their partner. You do find a desperation with them. They are lost.
She says she eases her clients' pain when she's able to contact their deceased relatives, who always tell her that they're safe and at peace.
I hesitate to call it a gift, but maybe. I do believe we've all got our gifts. I don't agree that it's something that's special or that you're above others. And I think it's got to be used in the right way. I think you've got to be very careful that you don't become arrogant with it. You know,
a few years ago, McCarthy was doing a tarot card reading for a man when she says the spirit of his girlfriend, who she later found out had been killed in a vehicle collision, started communicating with her. She says she's grateful for such unforeseen contacts with the dead because they comfort her clients immensely.
Especially when it's sometimes come up unexpectedly, when I'm actually doing another type of reading and that comes up for them, that's not what they expect. There's a wonderful feeling of just a big sigh of thank goodness. Or tears, you do get tears.
McCarthy explains that she doesn't see dead people as physical manifestations. It's a more subtle mental process.
I literally see in my mind a person or a place or how they look, what they're wearing, what they are saying or trying to give across. No, nothing bizarre happens. No, the room doesn't shake. Things aren't knocked over.
She says she's not bothered that some faiths condemn attempts to contact departed souls and the consultation of mediums as sins.
I have had a couple of readings with people that are religious and have been a bit nervous and have said, is this okay? Should I maybe not be here? And I always say, well, that's up to you. I certainly don't believe what I'm doing is evil, but, you know, if you really are that uncomfortable, then maybe you mustn't do it.
McCarthy acknowledges she's often wished that she didn't possess the ability to communicate with the dead and was more normal, as she puts it. But she says she's gradually grown to accept her path in life.
I don't run around preaching love and light. I just do what I do in the time that I do it. And I've learned to see that it's helpful for others. And I'm seeing that as the good side. And actually, if I had to stop now, it would be a little disappointing. I enjoy helping people.
McCarthy's adamant that what she does comes from a good place, and that giving people peace of mind and alleviating their pain qualifies her as a good, sincere person. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
In northern Nigeria, thousands of Nigerian youth of the Civilian Joint Task Force in Borno State are scouring for information on the location of more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped from their school last month. Peregrino Brema is a spokesperson for Nigeria's Muslims Against Terror group. He tells Ricky Shryock the task force relays to Nigerian security forces information from local residents about Boko Haram sightings.
According to Senator Ndume from Borno Time, there's some information on where the girls are. The military is too slow to respond. Within the 3 weeks, there have been lots of reports of sightings of the girls by locals and civilian JTF of the girls. The military is too slow. At a point, the military said, the chief of military defense, Alex Bade, said, you know, that they can't go there. If they go there to try to get the girls, they would kill the girls. So they basically leave the terrorists to be able to run and move around. So from what we are hearing, a lot of them have been moved out of the country. Most of them are married, or a good number of them are married. So the situation is getting worse every day. This is not reversible anymore. It's irreversibly out of order.
What kind of efforts on the ground are there with the groups, such as your group, working with the parents of the girls to themselves find the girls?
What we work with are the civilian JTF, who are the largest number on the ground. And now, civilian JTF, what it is a group which is between 3,000 to 30,000 youth in the area. So it's an informal group. Most of them are informal. There's a registered aspect with the government, which are just about 1,000. So that's limited. And the registered aspect are only in the capital, Maiduguri. But we are talking about basically all youth of the states who are participating and helping. So they keep giving us information on movements. The problem in Nigeria is, for one thing, with the military, you don't have a rapid response. So, for instance, when Boko Haram comes to a community, before the military is going to respond, or if there's a call for the military, it takes a long time. Some communities could be attacked for 8 hours without a response. There are so many things lacking in security infrastructure in those communities. The civilian JTF are planning right now to actually take a procession to the government to ask again for being the right to be able to have better arms to confront the terrorists.
These are civilian groups.
These are all civilian. The main thing they are working with right now is just information from villagers on sightings, from the Fulani and other villagers who tell them, okay, we heard they were here, or we heard they are here. And all that information is coordinated to the government.
Peregrine Obrema is spokesperson for the Nigerian group Muslims Against Terror. He was speaking from New York to Ricky Shryock. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since 2009, when it began a campaign to overthrow the government of Nigeria and replace it with a regime based allegedly on a strict interpretation of Islamic law, the criminal terrorist group commonly known as Boko Haram has wreaked death and destruction across much of that nation's northern half. The group's insurgency has claimed the lives of more than 4,000 people and forced hundreds of thousands to flee their homes. At first targeting police and other government officials and facilities, Boko Haram has broadened its attacks to churches, mosques, schools, media outlets, markets, and other civilian sites, leaving a trail of blood wherever it strikes. On April 14th, the group varied its tactics yet again, attacking a school for girls in the northern state of Borno and abducting more than 250 students, some as young as 15 years old. The group's leader, Abu Bakr Shekau, released a video brazenly claiming credit for the raid and threatening to sell the girls, saying they should not have been in school, but rather should get married. Even then, the attacks on civilians continued, with hundreds feared dead in a community on Nigeria's border with Cameroon, where Boko Haram fighters stormed the town, setting fire to shops and houses, and shooting residents as they tried to escape. Long a close friend of the Nigerian people, the United States has been aiding the government in its fight with the militants, providing law enforcement training, communications equipment, and intelligence assistance. Boko Haram leaders have been sanctioned and a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to Shekau's location. With the kidnapping of the Chibok students, more assistance still will be provided. U.S. officials are assembling a team of military and law enforcement specialists and investigators to help in the search for the abducted girls. The group has arrived in Nigeria to provide officials there with expertise in a number of areas to aid with the search. Boko Haram's actions are a blow not only to the families of the missing girls and their countrymen, but to the civilized world as a whole. President Obama has directed the U.S. to do everything it can to help find and free the young women.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Africa Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly.
We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.